I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
The temples that I built for you, and I sang songs of praise and love. And I sang songs of burying you alive. And see, I had to tear it down.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. We're your host, Finger on the Pulse. I'm Greg, staring at Darren.
Hey, what's up? I like your shirt. Is that new?
No. I'm actually going to go get like a second fitting for that Martin Greenfield, so I had to put on a dress-up shirt.
My jacket wasn't ready.
Your jacket will be ready soon.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm Darren. We are living in a post-Oscar
Hayes, congratulations to the artist. We knew no one involved in that project.
Yeah. I mean, anyway.
One comment I have about that is that the dog was there during the acceptance speech.
Dude, the dog had a seat, and the dog was also at the Golden Globes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just like, well, that's a really terrible secret. Like, if the dog is hanging out backstage, it's obvious that they were one. He had a seat?
He had a seat. They panned. Anyway.
Imagine if you got bumped for the dog anyway. And the artist. We have Colm Egan, master distiller of Bushmills, all the way from Ireland.
Great to be here.
Welcome. Welcome, Snacky.
We tried to get you on last year, but schedule was too tight.
Too busy of a dance card.
Big shout out to Rebecca, Cornerstone Agency. Thank you for setting this up. We appreciate it. A year in the making.
We love you guys.
Oh, thanks. We love you too.
All right. So for anyone who, and I don't know how they wouldn't know what Bushmills Irish whiskey is, Colm, what is Bushmills Irish whiskey?
It's just the best tasting whiskey you're going to ever find in the whole world. You know, it's 400 years in the making. We actually got our first license still way back in April 1608. And all that knowledge and heritage has been squeezed into a bottle of Bushmills now. And it's been passed down from master distiller to master distiller. So I just feel very fortunate that I'm in possession of that great knowledge right now.
Do you know the actual recipe?
Yeah, there's not many. I know it right now. But
how many people know the recipe in the world?
There's probably probably only two or three, if I'm honest. Yeah,
really. Is it one of those things where like there's two copies kept in two safes in two different parts of the world?
Well, it's all done on taste, so the copy kind of changes from time to time as well. So the whiskey's matured in different types of oak season barrels. So generally, we try and keep the recipe in the taste, but the main reason that I'm on this earth is to keep Bushmills tasting the same it has been for the last 50, the last 100 years.
So that's quite a challenge.
Yeah. How does one get selected for that, what could be a very high pressure responsibility?
Well, it's fortunate this isn't TV because I've got a quite a big nose. So, you know, I have an advantage over most people. But, yeah, your olfactory senses are very important. So that's your nose, your sense of smell, sense of taste also. But I think really also you have to have a great and a deep sense of history and heritage. You have to really respect what the master distiller did in the past. You have to be able to replicate that. So the way that we make whiskey today is very similar to the way they made whiskey all those years ago. So we use the same ingredients. We follow the same traditions. And if you follow the same ingredients, the same traditions, chances are you're going to come out tasting with something very, very similar each day. And I don't do it on my own. There are 100 people back in the distillery and they're making a whiskey every day and they're actually maturing it every day. They're putting it into bottles every day. So, you know, it's a real team effort.
All right, so let's... And I'm sorry, I have to go back to this. How does one get this job? Because it seems like the dream job.
I also
job.
Feel that's probably your most asked question.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it goes up on, like, Ireland.Craigslist, right? I feel like it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Well, I think my whole life was dedicated. I just got lucky every step of my way. I got, in university, I was an engineer. So distiller is kind of, you have to be an engineer, you have to be a chemist, you have to be able to have a great smell. You got to be able to handle a lot of people because a lot of people work for you, work in the distillery. And you got to be able to go good at finance. So it's all that kind of, it's not easy to get
Sorry,
into
finance?
One. Finance, believe it or not. Yeah, you have to look after all the money and all the figures. And
that's part of the master distiller's
yeah,
job?
Yeah, you know, I do everything.
Wow. Are you serious?
You know, it's a big
I would
distillery.
Feel like by the time that you get there, there's like, you're just like, they don't want to distract you. They don't want to crowd your brain or any other senses, but just like making sure... There's got to be, like, another numbers guy.
No. Okay, I just need to deal with... Really, the numbers I need to deal with are really a number of casks. So we'd have 220,000 barrels sitting in the warehouse at any one time. And really, I suppose I do my main bit of tasting between probably about 9:30 in the morning and about 12.
Every day?
Every day, pretty much.
That's a way to start your day.
Yeah. I don't drink a lot of whiskey.
No, of course.
You actually taste. What you do is get a nice glass.
Yep.
A glass is like a tulip shape.
Yeah.
So you put the whiskey in, and then you have a narrower opening at the top of the glass. I add some water to it, and that concentrates up the aromas at the very neck of the glass. So when I bring it to my nose, then I'm looking exactly for it. So Bushmills typically has this nice, light, fruity spiciness to it, and that's very much what I'm looking for each time I taste and nose Bushmills.
So what happens when you come across a bad barrel? And how often does that happen? And this will probably be the hardest hitting question we have. But, no. But you know, what? Because, you know, I mean, I would imagine 99 out of 100 casks, perfect. Or not, you know, or need a slight adjustment. But what, you know, what happens? How does a barrel go badly? Or does a barrel ever go badly?
You know, believe it or not, because we've been using the same water source for all those years, we have a very, very tight spec on our barley that we use. So we only use mainly barley from Ireland. And Ireland's a very good region for growing barley, so it's very consistent. So if you have the raw ingredient, that's really the only ingredients that goes into it. We use yeast, so we have our own distilling strain of yeast. And again, we get our barrels from Kentucky. We get our barrels from Spain. And I like to deal with real people. So there's a guy, Kevin McLaughlin in Kentucky, that gets my barrels, and he knows the type of barrels I like.
Yeah.
And there's a great family in Spain, Antonio Paez, and they get the barrels for us. So really, when you add all that together, you're going to get very consistent whiskey.
Right.
So the only chance you get a poor barrel if it's poorly constructed. But you might get one in... 2 years. What happens is, at the end of the barrels are actually held together by blind nails. So they're just, if for some reason the barrel comes a little bit loose, the whiskey might touch some of that nail, and then it just gets a little bit taste of metal of it.
But can you save it?
No. It touches that nail, that's the end.
That's it?
That's the end. But luckily, it happens very rarely. Very rarely. So I think our kind of attention to detail and all the stuff that we do, we try and prevent that. And the guys that are getting the barrels for us in Kentucky and Spain, you know, really help us out in that way.
And when did you introduce Kentucky barrels in? Because it has been around since the 1600s. How did that evolution come about?
Yeah, I would say if you go back that far, really the whiskey coming off that still was pretty much used straight away. Maturation of whiskey probably came into being around the 1700s-1800s, but that would have been really used through sherry casks and port. It was a big trade between Spain and Portugal up into Ireland. And the empty barrels had to be used for something. You know, back in those days, they were used for storing all kinds of food. So when the whiskey was stored in there for a while, and if it was transported on the ships or whatever, I think really trial and error would have shown them that, whiskey matured in barrels actually got better.
Right.
So it only became law.
So it's kind of you say law?
Yeah, it's actually in law now. We have to use them, yeah.
Why is that?
I suppose it's a very precious industry to Ireland. We have to ensure that any new people coming into the industry perform to the right rules and regulations. So I suppose those rules and regulations have been perfected down the centuries, and we just want to maintain that.
So back in 16, let's say 15, we'll just say that, you could just come in, bring, your jug or whatever, and just kind of maybe even take it right off the tap.
Yeah, that's
back when it was smaller, in simpler times. Really.
Yeah, simpler times. I think really back in those times it was farmers, that was really with maybe some excess cereals, and they pretty much put them to good use, if you ask me.
Right.
Well, then how did Bushmills survive through all the years and become such the well-known and beloved brand that it is?
Well, I like to think taste. We just simply don't compromise in that taste. We've a bottle from 1882 in the distillery, and one of my most geeky moments, one of my best moments as a distiller, I actually took out some of the whiskey and tasted it. Now, the cork had shrunk, and the air had got at the whiskey a little bit, so it was a little bit musty, but you got through that. That whiskey that we made, we're making today, it was very, very similar to what we were making in 1882. So that was like a stake in the ground for me. I was very excited.
It's funny because food palates have changed so much over the years. I mean, the radical, when people talk about food from the 1700, 1800, things like that even the ingredients themselves have changed, but not the drinks, the whiskey.
No.
And why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think, I think similar thing with a lot of wines as well. So I think people kind of get a taste, they'll get a distilled spirit. Is very consistent, and I think a distilled spirit offers something to your palate that kind of remains quite consistent throughout your life. So once you get the taste for it, in your early 20s, I don't think it really changes over the years. Where we can get some of the taste to change is if you look at our 16 and 21 year old single malts, for instance. We actually start finishing them in different types of cask finishes. So we finish them in port casks and we finish them in Madeira casks.
After how many years?
So after 16 years and after 21 years. So I suppose really what I'm saying is some people's taste change, we can reflect that in our range of whiskies. But I think the main consistent taste that lies at the base of all Bushmills is still there and really is there for the last 100 or 150 years.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're going to take a pause.
And we're going to talk about new tastes.
We're going to talk about new tastes. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about old tastes, new tastes. And we'll talk about cooking and pairing and some toast, great. Right?
Looking forward. I love my toast.
Master Distiller Bushmills, and we are talking about we were just talking before the break about the 16 and 20 when you're all single malts, but let's go back. There's a few other brands, the more introductory level brands, I would say. So you have the Original, right?
Yeah.
And is that your most popular one?
Yeah, I think that's more popular even if you add all the rest of them together. I think it's the most versatile that we have. So the great thing about Bushmills Irish whiskey is that it's so smooth. So when you take it, it's unlike a lot of other whiskeys. You don't have the coarseness or the burn. And that's mainly down to the fact that we distill it three times.
Okay.
I like to think it's because it's got the world's greatest master distiller making it.
I mean, that's what I would say.
That's mainly matured in bourbon season barrels. So when you mature or age whiskey in bourbon season barrels, what you get is you get this nice vanilla and caramel and toasted wood feel to it. So, and you mix that in then with our triple distilled spirit, you get this very light, delicate, but smooth. So it's great in cocktails, great and nice. It's great for sharing, really.
Yeah, it is really good for sharing. And then you have the Blackbush, and what's that?
Yeah, so Blackbush, I suppose, is about 7 or 8 years old, okay. And mainly matured in sherry season casks. So it's much softer and gentler spirit. And yet you get this lovely nutty sweetness. So you take a sip, and it almost floats on your tongue. And just when it gets to the back of your throat, then it comes up, and you get this lovely nutty sweetness and the Bushmills succulent fruitiness. It's mainly matured in sherry season casks, so it gives you kind of just a little different feel to it.
Awesome. And then we have the 10-year, the 16-year, and the 21, which are all, you said, aged in more port casks. And
yeah, the 10 is mainly in bourbon barrels as well, but it's a 10-year-old single malt, so again, more kind of a milk chocolate feel to it. So very easy, actually very good with food, and complements food, I think, quite well. Whereas the 16 is finished off in a port cask, and the 21-year-old single malt is finished for 2 years in Madeira, so it gives you more of a dark chocolate and caramelized toffee feel to it. So, but beautiful. The finish lasts forever. It just seems to cling to your palate. So a little sip lasts forever.
And when you say single malt, what is that?
Yeah, it's two words. So single single means...
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the single word means it's made in one single distillery. And the malt means that all of the barley that's used to make that whiskey has been allowed to sprout and then dried. So if you allow barley to sprout and dry, you can call it malted barley. And if you use 100% malted barley to make your whiskey, you can then call that whiskey malt whiskey.
I mean, is that generally the single malt why it's more expensive? Because it's just one distillery and you can only get it from one spot as opposed to like a blend?
That's it. Malted whiskey was one of the most expensive cereals that you can use. Mm-hmm. But it also happens to be that way for a reason, because really, I suppose, that's the very traditional way of making whiskey. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you the best taste. And the most complexity and variety within the actual taste itself.
Do you have a favorite from the Bushmills line?
Would you ask a mother which of her five kids she loves the best?
I mean,
she just loves them all in its own way.
No, we have, and depending on the time and the situation.
Yeah.
So let's say that we let's say with the pizza, as we just got some from Roberta's. Yeah. Which one would you?
That's pizza. And what kind of pizza is that? That's like
margarita.
Nice cheese. So you need a little bit. So I think Blackbush would go perfect with that.
And for maybe like a nice, a nice steak, a hearty meat and potatoes.
Yeah, you need something maybe like 16 for that. You're going to have to treat yourself with that.
Yeah,
nice steak.
I feel like I should totally be treating myself now to a steak. But there's a new blend.
Yeah, so...
The honey.
Yeah, and I think you guys tried it.
I think we polished off a bottle.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Hey, you want to know the way to our hearts? Send us a bottle of whiskey Friday afternoon. It won't be there by Monday. So talk to us about it. It's just Irish honey.
Yeah, so I suppose very traditional in my household and kind of my parents as well, that if you were to come, you would get a nice hot toddy. So it would have been like honey with some hot water. We'd add some whiskey in it. So that was kind of like the source of the idea. But it was so good. I said, well, let's try and make something that tasted very similar. So we've come up with Irish honey. What we have taken is just the Bushmills original, and we've added real Irish honey to it. So it's very unlike anything else that's out there. So we're actually using real ingredients to get, I think, a real taste.
Yeah, because most of the time it's oils or essence, and it's
Yeah, it's quite... A lot of other honey products tend to be very sweet. We're tend to more go for the kind of real honey taste. That I think people enjoy.
So it's got the more floral pollen sort of earthy type of taste.
I think kind of like a dusty and kind of lavender, and then kind of like a nice summer fruits kind of taste to it.
So what's the best way to drink the new one? Because it's a totally different experience than all the other Bushmills.
Yeah.
So what's the best way to enjoy this?
Well, I think it's going to be a great shot. Really is. I think it's going to be one of those that, because you can really, as soon as you take it, just so easy, and it's kind of almost like a velvet carpet on the back of your throat there. It's just going to be so nice, and I think it'll bring the whole group together. Kind of brings a smile to your face when you taste it, because it does taste like that so nice. But I think it's going to be exciting as well. See, I've been talking to some mixologists, and they're really having some good fun with it as well.
I was going to say the cocktail game on this. Like, I mean, with Bushmills, I kind of, the most I'll ever mix it with is maybe soda, maybe a little bit of water, but this one just kind of screams like throwing it in with some other ingredients that could, you know, really open up a whole new category.
Yeah, so I was in LA last week just talking a little bit about it, and some of the mixologists there were really coming up with some nice stuff. I haven't spent enough time in New York yet, but I'm going to meet some, I think, later on.
I mean, there are so many master mixologists here.
Have you been to that Whiskey Grilled Cheese Bar that's in Williamsburg? Do you know about this place?
No, it sounds amazing.
Norman Kills. It's right across the street. It's on Leonard and Grand. It's only whiskey.
Wow.
And they serve six different types of gourmet grilled cheeses. So totally perfect for singing. Yeah.
Yeah. Bring it on.
Yeah. But the place is, it's kind of, I'm not going to lie, you can go back and check with the old episode when I talked about it the first time. I kind of got like a little tear to my eye because it's everything I could ever want. I finally saw a bar that, like, if I was to open a bar, this is exactly what it would look like. But this could be, you know, maybe, you know, after this, then go that way. Rebecca is nodding. Yes. Well, took a note.
If you see one opening in downtown Bushmills Village, you know where I got the idea from. Exactly. All right.
So if we were to do a shot, what is the appropriate toast for a shot of... any Bushmills?
Well, you know, there's three guys in the room. Obviously, if we ignore Becca without the C, but our one C, sorry.
Hey.
So it's not easy for me because I have to leave my beautiful wife at home and get on that first-class seat to get I arrive in New York to get the limo to the five-star hotel.
Of course.
Be tasting whiskey in the afternoon with you guys. So my wife doesn't fully understand what I have to go through. A nice toast when you're among friends. Or when you do a taste with me is to kind of remember my wife. And
of
so we'd pour three glasses, lift them in the air, and I'd simply say to our wives and girlfriends, may they never meet.
Well played.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us on the show. Yes, you have your finger up, Darren.
I do my finger up because the special event this Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
You're doing a Twitter takeover of Bushmills USA.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Can that mean I'm going to tweet at you?
And you're going to get the real Colm Egan Master Distiller coming right back at you. So,
what can we ask you about?
You, Tim, the world's your oyster. The funnier, the better. Make my mind work, you know, overtime. So,
okay, what can I pair?
I'm kind of an adventurous person by heart.
What is the, can I ask, where is the most adventurous place where you've had Bushmills?
Ooh, I think it was in a nice bar in Finland.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I did not.
Cool.
That's not at all the. Yeah, it's a bar that's like carved out of ice.
Oh, right.
Like ice hotels in the north.
Yeah.
That is, to be honest, that's not at all what I expected you to say. So that's literally like that. I would have never guessed that.
No, that's great.
I know my favorite place, to be honest, with friends. You'd have to come to Ireland, and there's a place right beside the distillery. It's called the Giant's Causeway, and it's like should be one of the wonders of the world. It's like these perfectly six-sided shape that nature has created, and it featured one of the Led Zeppelin album cover. So if you go there at dawn with a bunch of your buddies and you're right back to nature there, like you're right back, that's going to be the same as it was for the last 1,000 years, and your taste in Bushmills has been the same for the last few 100 years. I just think it's a perfect marriage together.
Awesome.
All right, put on the list.
Yeah,
add to the bucket list.
And all right, so the nuts and bolts website, Twitter, all that good stuff.
Yeah, you need to go to bushmills.com. It's got all that information for you.
Fantastic.
Great. Well, Colm, thank you so much for coming. We look forward to seeing you this week.
Yeah.
And hanging out and knocking back a couple Bushmills. And Rebecca, as always, thank you for helping set this up.
And please help us eat all this pizza.
Yeah. I know, I'm going to get in there now. Thank you.
Today's program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Everyone's digging into this pizza.
Yeah. We'd like to welcome to the show Becca with one C.
Hey. It's great to be here.
I know that's not... Yeah, I know you keep saying with one C, but that'd be really funny if that was your official artist name. Becca with one C.
Yeah, that would be
That
would
sounds
be
like a really bad, like tween pop band, like, from Nebraska.
I could see it happening, though.
Do you remember that Get Up Kid song, Michelle with one L?
Yeah, I love that song.
So there it is. And welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
So good to finally have you on here. I feel like this was always something we had talked about, but it seems today... really, really seems like a good fit because really big stuff today. You want to talk about it?
Yes, I'd love to. I'm really excited because today is the official release of my record in the UK on with label This Is Music. Thank you very much. It's including the remixes of Let's Run Wild and my single that's coming out called Fall Into Light. So really, really exciting stuff.
And This Is Music LTD, just a shout out, is a good friend of ours, Ali Isaacs.
I know, it's so weird. Like, all my worlds are colliding right now.
Very bizarre. But his wife, Marissa, was my boss at my internship at Cornerstone. Marissa Brickman, if you remember her. Yeah.
Small world.
So actually, really, when it was Cornerstone Promotions before the agency. Anyway. Congratulations.
Thanks.
We're very
so
excited.
Much.
We're going to hear that later, a little bit later in the show.
Absolutely.
Where are we on the charts right now? No, I'm just kidding.
Charts are not closed yet.
Charts haven't closed.
So I want to talk a little bit about your background. You're Juilliard trained. Mm-hmm. How do you go from being trained at Juilliard and into becoming into the electropop world?
Can we go back even further? How does one get into Juilliard?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's the toughest thing.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's weird. I was actually studying a lot of different types of music in high school, and I thought I was going to get into jazz, and I ended up auditioning for Juilliard because I originally wanted to go into film scoring, but I had always like written pop songs on the piano, and that's really my background. My roots is as a singer-songwriter. And so I kind of just auditioned to Juilliard as a fluke, like not expecting to get in. And then when I did get in, I was like, oh.
I'm sorry. What's a fluke Juilliard audition look like?
My safety school is Harvard.
No, not quite my safety school. It was kind of like, you know, the far-reaching dream. And I figured it'd give me the widest palette I could get. So
no, but seriously, I have never met anybody that's auditioned for Juilliard. So what do you have to do?
You have to initially just send in compositions, and then that's the first round. And then
you send in compositions?
Yeah, classical compositions. So basically,
that you wrote.
Yes.
When you're 18.
Yeah. So I had like a string quartet I'd written. I was really green, compared to the most of the other key composers there. They
are
had
you
all
justifying
written...
this? You guys got really
absolutely.
Oh, I was really. I'm sorry. Continue. I didn't realize. Like,
apologize for interrupting.
I'm sorry. No, I just didn't like. I know for art schools you send in a painting, but that's attainable.
It's called
you
get a portfolio. Yeah. It's more than one painting.
Okay, fine. Paintings and a drawing. Okay, so you're how many compositions?
I sent in one composition because I had really hadn't written that many serious pieces at that point. So I had a string quartet, and they called me back for the first round. So then the second round was you go and take exams, and you're basically like killed in front of a jury one at a time. All these Pulitzer Prize winning composers like rip your pieces apart, and I definitely thought by the end like people are running out of the auditions crying. I'm like, I definitely didn't get in.
Oh my god, that's
forget
so
it.
Mean.
this is how you make it.
It's part of the whole game. You know, like
I mean, that's the beginning.
Skin.
I feel of like you know facing a musical career.
You know what? I guess it's better than going to some liberal arts school and being like, yeah, here's a $40,000 a year sociology degree. You will make no money and have no job.
Well, I mean, I guess like the downside of going to such a focused place is like you don't really get a broad spectrum. Like it was super focused, and I ended up taking electives at Hunter College and just trying to broaden my horizons. But it was a great experience overall.
That's definitely. So awesome.
Thanks. And then when I graduated, I basically realized like, wait, what am I doing? I can't be in a room isolated from everyone, and I really need to really talk to people in a more direct way. So that's how I started performing.
Where was your first show?
I think it was at the Slipper Room in the Lower East Side, actually.
I remember that place. Yeah. I remember when I was hanging out with Zoe and you were performing. This was
shout out to Zoe.
Zoe, who's my old dear friend from Jewish camp.
And hey, Becca's sister.
And Becca's sister. Context.
Yeah. Zoe rocks.
Didn't you used to do, I don't want to say a gothy thing, but it was like a little bit darker, wasn't it, right? I remember seeing photos and videos. I remember leather. I could be wrong.
Actually, it's funny you bring that up, but yeah.
How funny. How funny.
I wasn't going to talk about that today. No, just kidding.
That's not on the talking points email.
No, actually, that was a really fun phase. I was performing backup keyboards and vocals for other bands. Yes. One of them was Brain Dance, and it was a really fun like costume party for me. I got to wear like a vinyl dress and like really high platform boots with buckles up and down them, and I was like, yeah, I can get into this.
Yeah, I remember that.
why don't we hear a song?
All right. I'm going to play Rage and Fascination. It's a cover by Christina.
Great. Live on Snacky Tunes.
Christina with one S?
Yes, one S.
But 10 T's.
All right, here we go. Becca with one C, live on Snacky Tunes.
Expected love and passion, but this seems to be my ration. Delta from an high as I feel the years slip by. The flip side of love is hate, they say. When I toss that coin, it only comes up one way, but I keep tossing. Me here. I'm not on a court under. You're too bitchy for my notions of man, and your arms are far too slender. It's not just admiration. We do things very well. It takes a lot of know-how, making such stylish hell. That disdain spike when mutual acclaim as we perfect a game in rage and fascination. Rage and fascination. Rage and fascination. As I watch you. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Like self-applause when you tug at your tie. I rifle all your pockets for forgotten change when you're asleep. If you notice, then I lie. Come into my parlor, set the spider to fly. It's a whole new way to die.
Awesome.
Thanks so much.
So how did you emerge from your leather patent high boot wearing days into what you have currently evolved into?
Well, I've always like been a really curious person, just wanting to explore as much as possible and different styles of music. And I've had a lot of different, a different different sounds, like different times where I've been trying to kind of find my actual sound as a as an artist. And but I've always been into this like really electronic kind of feeling. And I've released some music on my own before this this Is Music release. So but it keeps on getting more defined. And I don't know. I guess I'm kind of meandering here. I'm not really sure how to answer that question.
No, that was good. Who are some of your like influences or people that you love?
I love Miles Davis, Stravinsky, Chromeo, Basement Jacks. My new favorite band is Jessica Six, Ellie Goulding, Licky Lee, Kylie Minogue has always been a favorite. It's just kind of across the board. I love Boards of Canada, Caribou.
You said that you're doing some work with Morgan from Jessica Six.
Yeah.
Who they were in here as Midnight Magic a year and a little bit of change ago.
Mm-hmm.
What type of music are you guys working on together?
It's kind of like weird space disco.
Go on.
Well, he has like a crazy studio with every possible vintage keyboard you could possibly imagine. So it's just been really about having fun and playing with different sounds and kind of stacking harmonies. And it's a bit more like soulful than Fall Into Light and Let's Run Wild. But it's definitely on the same wavelength. So I'm really excited about it. And he's just wonderful to work with.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
What are you looking at me for?
No, you look like you had a question on your mind.
No, I did. So talk to us about the food that you eat and that you make when you're in the studio. Because we always find that that is sort of the telltale sign of a certain type of artist, of what inspires them gastronomically, if you will, and mm-hmm. musically at the same time.
Totally. Oh, I love food. I'm kind of obsessed with Asian food. Like, I could eat sushi any night of the week. I'm really into ikura and uni, mm-hmm. masago, tamago. I don't know. I was recently checking out that sushi restaurant. I think it's called 1 or 8 in Williamsburg.
You've been there, right, Craig?
Yeah, that place is awesome. And it's been there for forever. And I kind of just, it's like one of those hidden in plain sight type of restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
It's right next to Issa. It's on South 2nd and White.
Yeah, so I got to sit at the sushi bar and like tried every possible different kind of fish you could possibly imagine, and it was wonderful. So I try to eat that as much as possible.
Is that what you eat when you're in the studio, when you're writing?
In the studio, I just kind of try to eat healthy. Like, I like to cook fish with ginger. It's all very Asian inspired, like chives, ginger, lemon, quinoa, interesting salads.
And are you able to keep up that healthy eating on the road?
Well, it's kind of tricky, but I haven't really been on tour yet. That's like the next phase, but I'm really hoping that I can sort that out because it must be really tricky.
Let's talk about these humantashens that you brought.
Okay.
Grandmother's recipe?
It's kind of top secret, so I'm not really allowed to say.
What do you mean, Tom? Whoa! You can't even say if it's your grandma's recipe?
No, it's really like it's been in the family for a long time. They were her mom's recipe that she passed down. So I recently got this massive book, like yay big, of family recipes, and I'm just starting to dig into it. But it's pretty massive.
What's the best thing you found in there?
God, it's all so good. I don't know. The humantashen's pretty good. And there's a cucumber tomato soup, like a chilled soup, that's really good. Mm. I'm kind of having trouble thinking of everything because there's just so many things in there. Oh, I'm getting a note. Oh, the artichoke squares. Yeah, thank you.
Wait, artichoke what? What are artichokes?
Artichoke squares. You kind of like cook them in massive amounts of garlic, and that
always
helps.
Wait, but I've never heard of an artichoke square.
Yeah, it's just how you chop them up, really.
Okay.
So,
yeah, okay.
Not too complicated.
Like the heart?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite, that's easily one of my favorite meals, just artichoke and a good dipping sauce.
Yeah, that's another thing I could eat every day.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I actually eat California artichokes every day with like a honey mustard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it really is one of my favorite things. I really have thought about this. This is not banter. This, you touched something.
Oh.
Something, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I feel special now. Actually, you know, now that I think about it, when I was working with Finley Brown in the studio on these songs, we had pretty much fish tacos every day.
Oh, nice.
Every day was a fish taco
Where were
day.
You recording?
It was in Williamsburg. Actually, Greenpoint. I forget the street.
Goodfish Tacos in Greenpoint.
Yeah, I know. Calexico? Surprising. No, it wasn't Calexico.
Papacito's.
Yes, that was it.
They actually do have really good fish tacos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could never get bored of that.
Could never get bored of that. Nice cabbage slaw, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. And the guacamole.
Yes.
To die for. Yeah.
Let's
hear another song.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. That's why we're twins. Because we think in the same way.
I do the exact same thing. I like to freak people out with my sister.
Oh, with Zoe?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just the two of you?
Yeah, just the two of us.
Zoe played piano for a while, didn't she?
Yeah, actually, I used to kind of make her play duets with me and harmonies, and she was always really, really great at that. So
she was. I remember.
Was fortunate to have her helping me out.
Oh, and before Lisa, I forget, big shout out to Amrit, who brought the idea of booking you on the show.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Amrit. Yeah.
And congratulations to Zoe and Amrit on the Dosa Hut trailer
thing.
Response.
Adventure.
It's been fantastic. It's
gonna be awesome. So what are you going to play next?
I'm going to play Let's Run Wild, which is actually the first song that you played before.
The single.
So, yes.
This is the new single off our new album.
All right.
Live on Snacky Tunes.
Barn burner. What a jam.
Hey, thanks.
So curious about Juilliard. Did they teach you, besides, you know, composition and things, like, how to be a musician in the modern age? Or was it really just music, like, just straight music training theory?
Like, any business classes?
Not really at all. So that was a little bit of a... I don't know, a little bit of a drawback, because I got out and I had no idea what I was doing. It was like falling off a cliff. So,
because we had Ducky in here a while ago, who's at NY. Do you know her?
Oh, yeah. We actually played a show with her, I think, last year Sullivan Hall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well, she's cool.
At NYU for as a music major, mm-hmm. and she was talking, it's like they put you in a recording studio, they teach you marketing, like run the gamut.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of feel like NYU is such a... has like such broad reaches that you can actually pull from different departments, as opposed to something like Juilliard, which seems so focused.
Definitely. That's one of the cool things about a program like NYU. But I don't know, they may have changed it since I graduated, but yeah, that would have been a really nice perk.
What was one of the like the hardest lessons you had to learn as like a modern solo artist?
Like a hard class,
just like how, like, yeah, just no, just like what things,
real world, real life stuff.
Yeah, like what do you have to learn about for getting yourself out there?
I guess I don't know. I guess I really didn't know anything when I graduated, so I thought I would just get lucky and get discovered, just, you know, based on my skills or talent alone. But that's never enough. I mean, usually, unless you're really lucky. So that was really silly. But I guess the biggest thing was that, you know, you have to work really hard and you have to be ready to do everything. And if you're not ready to do that, then no one else is going to do it for you. So
how many gigs have you turned down?
I usually don't turn down a lot of gigs, but I have in the last little bit, because I realized that not every gig is equal.
But in the beginning.
Yeah, that's true. I try to do as much as possible. But like if you know, it's going to be a situation where there's a lot of people talking and people are not really paying attention, then that's not really what I'm here to do.
Your favorite gig? What's your favorite gig that you played so far? I'll stop saying gig. What's your favorite show? I don't know what gig.
I guess
sorry about that.
Yeah. Last year we played the Mercury Lounge. That was really awesome.
It's awesome.
And Zach Zweig is here, by the way. He's my drummer, so that was pretty kick ass.
So what's coming up? So the single's out today.
Mm-hmm.
What's up next?
So what's up next is there's going to be a worldwide official like online release with This Is Music on March 19th, and we'll be playing a show in conjunction with that. So
in New York.
Yeah, yes to be announced, so it'll be a surprise. And then also I have a Boots 17 commercial coming out.
What's that?
It's like a makeup commercial that I wrote the music for, and Zach assisted me in the music writing of that. So, and then they flew me over to shoot the commercial, so that'll be launching next week, I think, March 6th. Awesome.
On TV?
It's going to be online, I think, on the Facebook 17 Cosmetics page. So
ooh,
you can peep that there. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's basically like a full-length song. So it was basically like shooting a music video. So it's not a real commercial. Yeah.
So, well, we want to thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
And before
so
we
much.
Have you play one last song, why don't you give us like the nuts and bolts where people can find you,
yeah,
follow you.
Sure. Well, I'm on Tumblr under Becca Dreams. That's BECA and then Dreams. And then Facebook and Twitter also at the same handle. So
you can awesome. Well, thanks so much. Thank you, Colm, for joining us today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rebecca, again. Next week, we have our really good buddy Ramesh playing live in studio, who used to be in Voxtrot. So we're really, really excited
that's
about
awesome.
That.
And I think it's also the Do or Dine guys.
Oh, amazing. And then in two
Innovators.
Weeks, and then in 2 weeks, we'll have Amrit on from Stereo Gum doing his South by Southwest preview.
And he was just added to our South by Southwest panel with Richard Blaze, which is happening that Friday of the music at 3:30.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't know, was it 17th?
I don't know, something like
I think
that.
It's the 17th. 16th or 17th. But it's going to be awesome. 16th.
16th.
We'll be in Texas, y'all.
So what are you going to take us out with?
I'm going to take you out with Fall Into Light.
Awesome.
Amazing.
Well, thank you. Congratulations to all the Oscars, winners and losers. You're all great stars.
Wow.
Congratulations.
And congratulations again for your record coming out today.
Yes.
So
really
much.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Take it away.
All right. Thank you. between us. They say it's not right. They don't believe us. We'll show them tonight.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.